Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. I want to begin today with some important updates regarding Maryland's coordinated efforts to prepare for COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, which has become a major public health threat around the globe. On Monday, as chairman of the National Governors Association, I joined Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Azar, and others in the Situation Room at the White House for a teleconference with top-ranking federal officials and nearly all of America's governors regarding the coordinated federal-state response to COVID-19. And we are in constant communication with federal officials, governors in other states, and with our state and local officials who are on the front lines leading our preparedness efforts. Here in Maryland, there is not yet any public health emergency. Yesterday, the Maryland State Public Health Laboratory was approved for testing for COVID-19, giving our state the capability to quickly test for potential cases. As of this morning, 21 individuals in Maryland have been tested. 10 results have been negative, and 11 still remain pending, but there are no positive cases. While we continue to hope for the best, we are also actively planning for the worst. This morning, the Maryland Emergency Management Agency is raising our activation level to enhanced in order to mobilize additional resources. Our administration is also submitting a supplemental budget, which includes $10 million in emergency coronavirus preparedness funding. In addition, we are submitting emergency legislation today, allowing us the ability to transfer any necessary resources from the Rainy Day Fund for costs associated with the state's coronavirus response. Given the rapidly evolving nature of this threat to public health, it is critical that we have the flexibility to immediately access these resources. I want to continue to assure Marylanders that our state is taking every precaution when it comes to the coronavirus. Our highest priority is keeping our residents safe. I would encourage all of our citizens not to panic, but to take this seriously and continue to stay informed. By visiting health.maryland.gov/coronavirus. Residents can also call our hotline at 211 to connect with a helpline representative to get information and community resources regarding the coronavirus. And we will continue to update our citizens on a regular basis as the situation develops. Now, let's move on to the business of the day. It's always great to join my colleagues here on their home turf in the Goldstein Building. We're here this morning for our semi-annual bond sale. I know that the treasurer and her staff have been working very hard to make sure that today's bond sale is a success. Last week, we were very pleased that all three rating agencies reaffirmed Maryland's AAA bond rating. Maryland is one of only 13 states in America to receive this coveted ranking. And our AAA rating is the result of all of us working together in a bipartisan manner and acting as prudent fiscal stewards of the taxpayers' money. All three rating agencies noted our state's vigilant debt management, sound budget policy, and proactive fiscal management, including this board's quick, decisive actions to address mid-year shortfalls. And I want to especially applaud my colleagues, Treasurer Kopp and Comptroller Franco, and their staffs for their tremendous work, and to thank them for their collaboration with our team, especially with our Budget Secretary, David Brinkley, and his staff. And I can tell you we would not have received this AAA bond rating without this entire team all working collaboratively together. So let's give them all a big round of applause, everybody. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks. Madam Treasurer?
Thank you. Governor, thank you very much. On behalf of our office and all the offices which have been working together, you're right. The Department of Budget Management, the Comptroller's Office, the Legislative Fiscal Office, everyone pulling together. And the rating agencies obviously recognized it and appreciated it, that while we may differ on some political issues, we're together on the fiscal health of this state. And our system, thank you for leading on the coronavirus. Our system is unique in its flexibility and its integrity, I think, and the flexibility in dealing with that, the flexibility in having some funds when the legislature is out of session to deal with emergencies is part of what the rating agencies look at. We will be having sales throughout the morning, but at 10:30 in about 15 minutes, we will do one of the two parts of the new money issuance and then go on to taxable and refunding. So as far as we are concerned, this is a very important part of the agenda. But another important part that I know you're going to address next is the issue of rectifying the wrong that was done three more of our citizens in the past, three men who were taken and put in prison out of middle school. Many of us have children in middle school right now and are only now recognizing the freedom that they deserve and should have had all along because State Prosecutor Mosby and her integrity unit sought them out, and because of ongoing support and faith on the part of these three gentlemen, and we are now in a position to recognize it, and I'm just terrifically pleased because of that. And I know the Comptroller and you, Chairman.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and Madam Treasurer, and I want to, along with the Treasurer, welcome everybody to the Louis Goldstein Treasury Building for the bond sale. Governor, I couldn't agree with you more about the potential impact of coronavirus. Thank you for your comments. I know that you and your administration have been working nonstop with our federal, state, and local partners to ensure that we're as prepared as we can be. And the testing announcement is very welcome news. We've already seen the fatal impact that this global outbreak has caused. Here in the United States, 9 people have died. We hear new reports on a daily basis about the rising number of individuals who are diagnosed with the virus. Obviously, public health and safety continues to be the main focus of government attention and resources. But I am beginning to turn my attention as the comptroller and the state's chief fiscal officer to the economic and fiscal impact that the coronavirus outbreak has already caused for our state and will continue, unfortunately, in the event that the outbreak worsens. With a significant percentage of our state's revenue stream directly impacted by what happens on Wall Street, with the success of Maryland's economic assets like the state-owned Port of Baltimore and the state-owned BWI Marshall Airport, dependent on international commerce and travel, not to mention the fact that consumer confidence obviously is affected. Unclear, but consumer confidence is what powers our economy. This is an area where we have to keep an eye on this as this pandemic continues to disrupt our way of life. It has the potential to inflict significant damage on top of all the public health concerns that everybody has as their rightful priority. We have this economic and fiscal situation. So earlier this week, I directed my team to begin planning a public forum, summit, so to speak, I guess, to examine the economic impacts of the coronavirus in Maryland. This forum is being planned in partnership with the Schaefer Center for Public Policy at the University of Baltimore. It will include experts and stakeholders who can provide us with valuable insights into the current and potential economic impact of this virus. We'll be releasing the specific details later this week, but it will be held March 24th at 10 a.m. in Baltimore. I'm sure it will be, but we'll have more data there, I think, than we have right now. But Governor, thank you for your leadership. Madam Treasurer, thank you. I associate myself with all your comments.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the Secretary's agenda.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, there are 19 items on the Secretary's agenda, 3 reports of emergency procurement. Item 4 is the bond sale.
Okay, I want to take a moment just to address supplemental items 17, 18, and 19, which the Treasurer commented on in her opening comments, which asks the board to grant compensation to 3 men who were wrongfully convicted and spent over 35 years incarcerated for crimes they did not commit. All of them experienced unimaginable pain while they were incarcerated. And there is no question that they deserve to be justly compensated as they work to rebuild their lives. I know that all 3 of us strongly agree with that. And last fall, when this board took action to compensate 5 wrongfully convicted men, I strongly urged members of the legislature to put a process in place in order to ensure that individualized consideration of every one of these important cases, that we lay out specific guidelines for compensating any additional exonerees as we move forward. And we are looking forward. We weren't successful in last year's legislative session in getting that done, but we are looking forward to continuing to work with the legislative leaders over the final closing weeks of this legislative session on a long-term bipartisan solution to this issue. So we're going to deal with these 3 cases today, but I still want to encourage our colleagues in the legislature on both sides of the aisle to work towards a long-term solution with us. So with that, any comments from you, Madam Treasurer, on this particular item? Or you already kind of covered that.
Could agree more, Governor. Mr. Chestnut, Wilkins, and Stewart deserve our sincere apologies on behalf. It wasn't just a mistake. Someone else did the deed, and it was known. I just thank God it was recognized, and thank God they maintained their faith in justice. And in the end, justice prevailed. But you know, they say the mills of justice grind slowly, but this is extraordinarily slowly. But they did grind fine, and these gentlemen are recognized and have our apologies and an attempt at financial recompense.
Thank you, Governor. And I want to applaud the Board of Public Works, my colleagues, for moving quickly to approve compensation to these Marylanders who have spent years behind bars for crimes that they did not commit. And as the Treasurer and the Governor noted, these are years that can't be regained. They were incarcerated, separated from their families, friends, and loved ones. Years that they could have spent pursuing their hopes and dreams and living their lives freely. Alfred Chestnut, Andrew Stewart Jr., Ransom Watkins are victims of a broken criminal justice system. And although no dollar amount can restore what was stolen from them, I hope that today's action brings some solace and a sense of vindication for these 3 individuals. Each of them will be receiving $81,868 for every year they spent unlawfully in incarceration. Where did that amount come from? That's the median household family income in Maryland. We, the Board of Public Works, chose that median income intentionally because their erroneous conviction and incarceration, we deprive these men with the opportunity to have a household, frankly, and the opportunity to gain an income and make contributions to their communities in our state. Governor, I'd really like to close by tipping my hat to the board staff for all their board work behind this, hard work behind all the scenes that made today's action possible. The governor was very, very calm and measured, but I remember when John Gontro, who is now the board's executive secretary, but he was filling the role of Ann Clace when this all came up. He presented the large amounts of money that were being asked for the previous allocation. And I said, what did the legislature do? And he said, well, the legislature really couldn't make your decision, so they're not there. I said, what do you want to do? He said, he came up with this very creative idea of the average family income. And I'd like to just give a tip of the hat to John Gontram, the board's executive secretary and my former liaison, because he is responsible for convincing a somewhat skeptical me that we were the right body to do this. But I think we are, and frankly, I'm not even sure you need legislation down the road. This is going to be something that will happen for generations now. I think the state is going to have a way in which we correct quickly egregious wrongs like this that have been committed and do the right thing as far as providing just a small, inadequate healing to these situations. So, John, I'm going to give you a round of applause. So thank you. And we're grateful, obviously, for everyone's effort. Governor Hogan, we couldn't have done it without the leadership that you've exhibited, but I particularly want to thank the Board of Public Works for being the kind of body that can step in the breach and actually make these wrongs right. And Madam Treasurer, I know you were a pounding the table, but we were a little bit flummoxed as to just exactly what we should do, and I know you quickly supported this creative idea.
Thank you all very, very much. Are there any other questions on the remainder of the Secretary's agenda?
Governor, I just point out that item 4, the bond sale, my understanding is the intention is to vote on it at 11:30.
Yeah, we have about 1 minute. I think we can probably wrap this up and make a motion on the rest of the Secretary's agenda and then do the bond sale. Or, or you want to wait and do the bond sale included in this?
I'll love the Treasurer's Office to explain their...
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, we'll take a break and do the explain the bond sale.
Christian, introduce yourself and explain the bond sale.
Okay, great. So my name is Christian, and I'm from the Treasurer's Office. I'm the Director of Debt Management. I'm trying to get the screen share here. So we have 4 bids that we're going to take today. We have 2 tax-exempt bids, a refunding that we're doing, and a taxable sale. Those bids are coming in every half an hour. So we've actually already taken 1 bid at 10. We're about to take another one here in just a couple of seconds. And we'll take 2 more at 11 and then 11:30. So the board won't need to vote until we take all 4 bids. And when I come back at 11:30, we'll confirm everything and you'll have to approve a submission that you'd like to.
It's a
controller's
technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could we turn the Wi-Fi on, please? Or, get me the channel changer.
So it is a very good day to sell bonds. As y'all know, when it's kind of tough in the global economy, there's typically a flight to quality. Maryland's AAA bonds are some of the most quality investments that investors can make. So there's a lot of demand for these this morning. When we took the first set at 10 a.m., we got one of the lowest rates we've ever received. Very much. We got a tick under 1%. 10-year treasury yields right now are under 1%. That's never happened before. 10-year MMD is under 1%. That's never happened before. So assuming everything holds up, we should have a good day. All right. So we've got three bids in already. Here in about 20 seconds, we will get... last of them, there's five, so we've got some of the declares in. Let's see.
Can everybody see that?
Yeah. All right, and done. Okay, so here's the results from that second group. Go over here. It looks like Morgan Stanley is the low bid. You see that TIC. This tick is a little bit higher than the first group because these are longer date of maturity. So all of these mature in 31 or later. So it looks like we got a total premium of about $77.5 million just on the second group. On the first group, we got another $72 million. So we're going to be around $150 million in total premium.
Can you just explain the premiums quickly?
So essentially, when there is when we sell these bonds, we have a coupon for each maturity, and typically that coupon is either 4 or 5%. If the market rate that the bond should actually go for is less than that coupon structure that the investors want, that the banks want, then they pay us more money up front to make up for that difference over time. So the fact that rates are so, the market rate is so low right now, but investors are asking for a 4 or 5% coupon, means they're giving us a bunch of money today, cash, to purchase these bonds. So I will just show you these real quick. So again, here's the results from the second sale. From the first sale, if I can get back to that. Here is the result from the first sale. It's also Morgan. And here's that premium number and that tick, 0.887. So, great result for the first two. We're going to go back, confirm these, take a couple more bids, and we'll be back around 11:30 to have it all.
This is all of the tax exempt new money.
Okay. So we have a refunding sale and a tax exempt. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Build some schools.
That's great news. So are there any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Yes. Question A2.
Bruce, report A2 is a report of emergency contract for residential child care services. I understand Greg James, Secretary of DHS.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Greg James, Deputy Secretary for Operations of the Maryland Department of Human Services. I have with me this morning Daniil Thomas, who is our Chief of Staff for the Social Services Administration. The item before you is a contract modification for one of our providers in Maryland. The provider is Innovative Services. It is Innovative Services. What we are asking for with this modification is they have created an additional facility with 3 new beds, and we have placed youth there. This provider serves youth with intellectual or developmental disabilities or autism, and this program will serve some of our most challenging youth. So creating this additional capacity is critical for the department.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and I really appreciate your professionalism in support of our kids that are in need of special services like this. But I noticed this article in YPR, a news segment concerning foster children whose stays in psychiatric hospitals are intentionally extended by DHS and social services, even after doctors and judges have determined that they're no longer needed to be there in the psychiatric hospital. Maryland foster children stay in hospitals because they have nowhere else to go. Just comment for a minute about how many kids we're talking about and what exactly is going on, and particularly the kids that don't have to be there.
Certainly. So all of these youth, when they were taken to the hospital, had a medical need to be there, whether that is a somatic physical medical issue or a psychiatric or behavioral issue that required hospitalization at the time. In some cases, when they have been stabilized in that hospital environment and the doctors in that emergency department or psychiatric unit have certified that the youth no longer or child no longer needs to be there, it takes us some time to arrange for the next placement for that child, assuming that they're not going to be able to return back to the to their original program. Our information is that over the past 2 years, we have had approximately 63 youth who have overstayed at a hospital. Of those, about half were psychiatric placements. Half of those, the overstay was 5 days or less. Three quarters of those, the overstay was 10 days or less. So we were making arrangements. There are a handful of outlier cases that have had significant and lengthy overstays. I do want to push back, by the way, and to the extent that that the story creates the impression that this is somehow a policy or practice of the department to take youth to the hospital simply because there's no other placement. That is not the case. It did not come through in that story and the quotes there, but that was certainly conveyed to the reporters at the time. And that has never been and will never be the policy of the department. We have been working very closely with our colleagues at the Department of Health and the other state agencies that work with these children to develop additional placement options for these children so that we can reduce even those long overstays. Currently, we have 33 children in Maryland who are hospitalized for various medical conditions or psychiatric or behavioral issues. Of those, three are on overstay, two of which are medically fragile youth. And in all three cases, we do have a placement identified for them. We're simply waiting for the bed to become available so that we can transfer them.
Right. Well, I understand from that you have a short-term plan, you have a long-term plan. Thank you for doing that. I have a lot of confidence in your leadership and empathy for these kids who obviously need to be placed in a proper family context. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Yes. There's the procurement item three, please.
Item three is the procurement is the PAR report from the Department of General Services. You have the Deputy Secretary of the Department of General Services here.
So this is something I'm not particularly happy about, I guess, just from the reading of the information. We're looking at a contract we approved for $58,000 for mold remediation at Deerstead Hospital in March 2018, and over a two-year span, it's grown to $6.2 million. Is that me? Am I doing something on the...
I think I did something.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure what.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just curious as to these huge increases. And, you know, there were 38 modifications to the initial $58,000 contract. All 38, of course, were below the $200,000 threshold required for Board of Public Works approval. And there appeared to be one modification on an almost biweekly basis over the course of a two-year span. What, you know, I understand mold remediation is crucial, but what's going on?
Mr. Comptroller, I have Courtney Lee here to explain the process of mold remediation and its insidious weave throughout a building.
That's an 8,000% increase.
Yes. Maybe we can get a better estimate in the future, but please go ahead and tell us what this is, because we don't want to have convenient extensions fall just below 200,000, and you get the drift. We want to be able to have an idea of what exactly the project is going to cost.
Absolutely. Good morning, Governor, Treasurer, and Comptroller. For the record, my name is Courtney League. I'm the Chief of Facilities Engineering for the Department of General Services. So this is Deerstead Hospital, mold We were made aware of a potential mold issue in 2017, towards the end of the summer of 2017. We brought an industrial hygienist in at the request of MDH to address that and assess what that initial issue was. As a result of that, mold was identified. We mobilized a contractor specialized in remediation on site to address that particular concern. Further evaluation of the 120,000 square foot hospital identified mold throughout the building. As we were working through the building, the industrial hygienist was assessing the areas as we moved through the building to make recommendations for remediation. Mold is a unique thing to remediate. You might come in 1 week and do an assessment of a building and come back the following week and it's a completely different assessment. It's difficult to pinpoint a specification in a mold remediation project. I will say also that when we began this process, we approached it with a three-prong setup where we had an industrial hygienist under a separate contract, we had the remediation contractor under contract, and we brought in an architect and engineer to evaluate the building to make recommendations on how we could repair the building so we could mitigate this from happening in the future. That evaluation was completed last fall. We've since taken those recommendations and we put them into our backlog for our facility renewal or operating projects so we can bring projects forward to correct the building deficiencies to not have this happen again in this particular situation.
Right, because there was a second project, not just the Deerheads mold remediation, but then the Court of Appeals, where we gave in February 6th, we voted for $887,000, I guess. But then in June of last year, within a 48-hour period, there were four change orders to that contract. One on June 24th and three the next day. So in a 48-hour period, the contract went from, $997,000 to nearly $1.5 million. And once again, these four change orders were just below the $200,000. So I accept your explanation that you've corrected the problem. I just want to make sure that you're aware that this just doesn't look quite right.
I appreciate that. And we're always looking for ways that we can improve our processes and approach these projects differently. We learn from each experience to find a better path forward.
Thank you.
Governor? Thank you.
I would move approval of the...
Second.
Point out with what I consider that bad news, whether it's bad news in terms of the program, in terms of the budgeting, or the format in which you report, which is possible. On the other hand, item 11, I think you will be pleased to see, as I was, Princess Anne wastewater treatment plant is now going on solar energy all around the state. The state is waking up. Actually, the Eastern Shore, between the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and these sorts of projects, is moving ahead very strongly to replace old energy with renewable, specifically solar in these cases. And I just want to point it out as maybe an incentive to other parts of the state.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Congratulations.
So there's a motion to approve the Secretary's agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
3-0.
My understanding is that is not inclusive of item 4, which is the bond sale item we approved at approximately 30, correct?
Do we need a motion to pull out item 4?
Sure.
Yeah, so is there a motion to pull item 4 out?
So moved.
Second, 3-0. So there's a motion for the remainder of the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second, 3-0. Thank you. Now we'll move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hathaway Riccio, the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 5 items on our real property agenda this morning for which we are seeking approval, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Any questions on DNR?
No.
Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you.
Got off easy today? 3-0. We're going to move on to the university system.
Good morning. Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have three items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Any questions on the university system?
Move approval.
Could you just explain two RP? I have no intention of voting against it.
I have someone here to explain it.
We have someone, we're going to round them up.
Well, you can do it some other time. I mean, we're obviously going to vote what happened.
That was a good explanation.
Luke Mowbray, Interim Director for Real Estate Planning and Space Management at the University of Maryland, Baltimore.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. Treasurer just had a question about to explain the item.
In simple language, people like me can explain what this is.
Sure. We are extending a ground lease on which a private building will be built. The ground lease term needed to be extending in order to secure financing for the construction of the project. The item also conveys two footpaths that exist on the city's plat to the developer so they could have the full assemblage to build the property on.
So there were just errors in the first.
The conveyance of the footpaths is kind of a clerical issue. The ground lease extension is actually related to the financing of the new building.
And it will now extend to when?
2095. Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you. So there's a motion to approve the university system agenda.
Second.
3-0 on the university system. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we move on to the Department of Transportation. Good morning, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 17 items today. If I may, Governor, I'm going to take a moment and highlight something we have on the DGS agenda related to our Customer Connect program. Customer Connect is an IT modernization project that will change the way we do business and help serve our customers a little bit more efficiently. It's going to allow businesses and individuals to complete more transactions than ever through our online system and streamline the processes and services that MBA provides. So this first phase will include, you'll be able to one-stop shop vehicle services, business licensing, processing of vehicles and fleets, including our international registration program with IRS for Rescue of Canada. Phase two will include all of our driver services. So MBA is truly transforming into this one-stop shop enterprise through our online services. And we have our representatives here to answer any questions you may have.
Great, thank you very much. Any questions on transportation?
I had one question on item 8. It's not anything that I'm concerned about. It's acquiring easements for the Purple Line. But, you know, we're right in the middle of tax season. Sometimes I have people come up and complain to me about, oh, my God, you can't believe how much taxes I have to pay. And I often say somewhat in jest, well, I'm glad you're making a lot of money because, you know, that's good for the treasury of the state. And don't be too upset. But I now have a lot of people coming up to me and complaining about the congestion caused by the Purple Line construction. And I say, folks, we all supported this. The governor, God bless him, put it in the budget. It is a fabulous transit project. Don't complain too much, but could you please give us an update as to whether there are any unforeseen issues that are going on, or is this all moving forward?
Purple Line going well. We had to deal with some of the initial challenges kind of getting off the ground, but it's about 25% complete today. We only have about 6 more properties that will come before the board, so that's really progressing well. We just last weekend set the beams over the Colesville Road Rail Bridge, going over WMATA and CSX, so that's going well. Our team was up in New York a few weeks ago. We're actually testing with some of the vehicles that are complete. We're testing them on some tracks in New York, and later this year we'll have them down here. So it's moving along.
Thank you very much.
Great, thank you very much. there a motion?
No, move approval.
Can I ask you a question, Rich? Item six is the purchase of a large number of diesel-powered buses. I understand when I asked, here's my frustration. As you know, the two key things to mitigating climate change in Maryland are transportation and the building. So everyone agrees, and the governor has an electric vehicle task force group. Everyone agrees we have to electrify our fleet. So here we are, renewing a fleet, there's nothing. It's all diesel. Now you're going to say part of it is for the locals, and they don't have the infrastructure yet for electric. The infrastructure is coming very quickly, and we could help them have it. Part of it is not local, it's mobility zone. When are we going to put our money where our mouth is?
Yes, Madam Treasurer, I think we're in a little bit of a transition period with the technology itself. It's the infrastructure as well. So this contract is mobility, and it's the local government right. purchasing, and we tend to let them drive what their needs are. The other piece is the technology itself is kind of driving some things. So, for instance, Indianapolis, they just had to actually cancel a zero-emission fleet contract because they were having some challenges with the ranges and how it was being handled in cold weather. So we're continuing to kind of push through the grant programs as we get into this transition period and that electrification of the fleet so that we can, one, transition the fleet, but also continue to not have any disruptions in our services between us and the locals.
So when are we going to transition the fleet?
I think Kevin is here, and he can give us a little bit more of a timeline.
Because we're just renewing, as I recall, at the airport, too. I mean, all over, we're renewing non-renewables.
Yeah. Good morning. For the record, Kevin Quinn, MTA Administrator. Happy to answer your question. So, at MTA, we have a current bus buy that goes through FY24, and our next procurement will be for zero-emission vehicles. We're committed to doing that. And we're committed to helping the locally operated transit systems where we can. To Secretary Slater's point, I think we don't want to be in the position of mandating that the locals go with an electric, a battery electric or a certain type of propulsion system. So we're doing all sorts of tests, and the locally operated transit systems, Montgomery County, Howard County, Frederick County, they're ramping up their fleets. Something that's coming up is cold weather. We're finding that buses that are running, the research is showing that buses that have to run regularly in 27 degrees or below are having significant battery issues. And so what this causes is bus fleets have to grow by as much as 50, 60%. So
I get that the county.
Yeah. So we're still testing it out. We still have that commitment out there. As the locals put in there, they request state funds annually from us. They have not put in their annual applications for electric vehicles from us yet. We're still talking to them about it. And I think to your point, we are getting to that point where we're going to need to do some sort of battery electric or at least some sort of zero emission type of fleet purchase.
Or say we didn't really mean what we were saying, which I hope we will not be saying. We do mean that we recognize that we have to stop investing in the old ways. No, not really. I understand the state, when the secretary put out to all of the state the vehicle list, you said the default position was what?
To adopt electric vehicles or plug-in
hybrids. But when they can. But we have to encourage and help them be able to do it.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a variety of federal grant programs out there that we're supporting the locals in going for. So there's an FTA low or no emissions program that we're supporting the locals. We're going after some of those ourselves. I think we're supporting all those efforts. I'll just, you know, caution out there that technology is still really being tested. And so I think there's a lot of agencies that are finding that they've committed to certain types of fleets and are running into some real trouble in providing reliability of service. The real value of transit is getting people off the road. That's the big one. And we don't want to be in a position of risking the reliability of a system by going with an untested propulsion system that results in even less people being able to take transit.
Right.
And so
we've
got to be cautious.
We go with untested propulsion systems, but we could at least go with what the private sector is going with now, what people around the world are going with now. We don't have to be right out there at the very tip of the arrow, but we got to move.
Absolutely.
Could I interject here? So last Friday, I'm walking out of my house in Tacoma Park. I walk up to the local store, about a half a block, and there are all these kids that have gotten out of middle school, and they're all excited and jumping around. I said, "Hey guys, what's going on?" I said, "Governor Hogan's here." I said, "Really? He is?" And sure enough, there was a big gaggle of folks surrounding the governor at our electric gas station, which he was promoting.
Not a gas station, it's electric vehicle.
So,
terminology now.
It used to be a gas station.
Yeah. The only one of its kind.
Yep. Anyway, I was saluting the electrification of our fleet down the road, I guess. But, Madam Treasurer, I agree with you. I think nothing happens unless you have a little bit of stimulus. But, Governor, thank you for being there in and Tacoma Park. I said welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you. And we actually put legislation in to double the electric vehicle tax credits this year, which we hope you can help us convince the legislature to go for. It looks as if they're trying to cut all of the tax credits, but that one I hope we can survive. And we've got now 1,800 charging stations. I think we are kind of on the cutting edge and out front ahead of most states. Thank you very much.
But if there's anything more we can do, talking to local people, talking to Mesa, we really have to.
Absolutely. We're doing a lot of information sharing in terms of what's out there. We're testing vehicles. The lots are testing vehicles.
I'm going to let the treasurer. I'm going to ask the treasurer about that budget, because they should not cut that. I didn't really realize that was what it was.
We're trying to double it. Because it's been wildly successful. We have 25,000 electric vehicles in the state now, and we'd like to see more.
I'm going to go there and tell them to cut it, because then they'll probably increase it or
triple it. It's probably a good idea. If there's any media here, make sure you put the treasurer. The controller's against this idea.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there a motion on the Department of Transportation agenda?
Move
approval. Second. 3-0. We're going to move on to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Reichert, Deputy Secretary of the Department of General Services. Today, the department is presenting 31 items for your consideration. We are withdrawing item 7GL and item 33GM. We do have representatives here who are available to answer any questions.
Item 7, I assume, is coming back.
Yes.
I mean, it's a project that many people are very interested in.
I think it's scheduled for next week.
Thank you very much. Governor, there are two projects that members of the legislature...
Yeah, I was going to mention that as well. I don't know if they're out there in the hallway or not, but we have a couple of items that I wanted to bring to everybody's attention. I don't think they can hear us out in the hallway, but on item 8... It's a grant to the Baltimore County Board of Education for the Essex Elementary School Playground Project. And I know that Senator Johnny Ray Sailing is here to speak on this item. I don't know if he's not in the room, I don't think, but if he's here, I know he's very supportive of the project. If he's not, we also have here on item 12 a $750,000 grant to the City of Annapolis Housing Authority for the Newtown Community Research Center, and Delegate Shanika Henson also was here to talk on that item. They're probably all busy, but I just wanted to let you know that they're very supportive of these two items, and we thank them for their support.
Delegate Henson, I believe, I may be wrong, was on the city council when this project was started, and now in the legislature saying the project...
See, it finally happened. That's great. Are there any other questions on the DGS?
Yes, item 3 is a capital grant to the Delmarva Community Services to support the development of the Chesapeake Grove Center including the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Intergenerational Center, the only not-for-profit mogul that I know in the state of Maryland who's able to do something like this successfully, and it's one of many, many things that he has done down in the Lower Shore. Mr. Sandy Grandy, I wonder, Sandy, if you could come up and say a word about your empire and how great it is.
Please. My empire is only like that because of you all. That's why it's like that. So, but
well,
thank you.
Welcome. We're happy to have a not-for-profit mogul here with us.
I think that's enough. I'll come back later. I can be there. No.
Yeah, this is good.
No, I'd like to thank you all for your constant support. And the governor and comptroller, you've been helpful, and your presence on the shore means so much when you come, and we can't do anything without your support, especially nonprofits, especially trying to build coalitions, trying to do infrastructure work, et cetera. It just, we need your help, and we so appreciate everything you've done for myself at Delmarva Community Services and our region, and I know you're so interested on the shore, both of y'all, I can only say how helpful.
And the treasurer is good.
Good. I wasn't sure you were listening. But thank you so much. And the Intergenerational Center is being built. It should be built in probably less than a year coming. So we should be in really good shape. And we'd love for you to come out and see it. And we're already planning on doing the other part of the project that's how 87 units for seniors also. So in Cambridge, Maryland.
Well, thank you very much for all of your great work. We certainly appreciate you coming today.
Again, I couldn't do it without your help. So okay. Thank you.
Any other questions on
I wanted to just take a moment. This is not on an item, but I know we're all aware that the Maryland State Board of Contract Appeals rendered a second opinion last week on the Maryland Insurance Agency lease dispute. These two opinions and their lengthy findings underscore what I said and believed at our January 8th meeting when I expressed serious doubts, concerns, and reservations about moving forward with the contract award before the Board of Contract Appeals had the opportunity to weigh in and issue their determination. What did they do now that they're finally determined? In the first opinion, they wrote that the procurement officers, and I quote, determination that it was in the state's best interest to cancel the solicitation to Montgomery Park was unreasonable, arbitrary, and capricious. What else did they find? To be blunt, a lot of the information you heard from DGS and MIA and Kornblatt at our January 8th meeting was proven to be inaccurate or could not be backed up by any evidence. And let me just refer to page 29 of the January 29th opinion. Quote, apparently the procurement officer acknowledged that she did not have any data on anticipated rate of employee turnover and that she had not seen any communications from experienced regulatory or professional staff that planned to leave MIA if it moved to Montgomery Park. That, unfortunately, is fascinating, since this was one of the top reasons that DGS and MIA cited as to why they needed to stay with Kornblatt. The Board of Contract Appeals, in the first opinion, found that despite the fact that Montgomery Park won this contract fair and square, and that Montgomery Park had done everything it was required to do, DGS engaged in delays and evasive tactics that kept Montgomery Park in the dark. All of this was occurring while DGS was still in regular contact with Kornblatt. Let me put this in greater context. Montgomery Park was notified that they had been selected as the recommended awardee on May 4th, 2018, and that DGS would be submitting this award for BPW approval in August of 2018. Between May 2018 and April 2019, nearly a year, after Montgomery Park was selected as the recommended awardee, DGS, or MIA apparently, did not convey to Montgomery Park any of the concerns that they raised at our January 8th meeting. about availability of public transit, about moving costs, about employee retention, and so on and so on and so on. But in April 2019, when Commissioner Redmer sent his letter outlining concerns that again had been contradicted by evidence gathered by the Board of Contract Appeals, procurement officer sent a cancellation notice to Montgomery Park the same day that Commissioner Redmer sent his letter to DGS. And Kornblatt's contention that it would go belly up if we didn't approve the award on January 8th, DGS claims that Kornblatt had the right to charge double rent and all the other doom and gloom scenarios that they gave it to January 8th then. So the contention it was going to go belly up, wrong, false. That they had the right to charge double rent, wrong, false. That all this doom and gloom was going to happen if we didn't correct the situation, false. But don't take my word for it. Read the Board of Contract Appeals opinion. What else did they find? In their opinion, on the second appeal, they concluded that DGS violated the procurement law in connection with the sole source award to Kornblatt. And the Board of Contract Appeals held that the procurement officer, and I quote, failure to document the reasons for her determination that it was in the state's best interest to sole source the removal lease for St. Paul to Kornblatt rather than award a new lease to Montgomery Park or conduct a competitive procurement for a new lease after the wrongful cancellation of the prior competitive procurement also violated the procurement law. So, Governor, I have tremendous respect for my colleagues, the Treasurer and the Governor. I understand that they didn't like this, or at least I know the Governor stated very clearly that he thought it was a very bad procurement. And all I'm suggesting is that we need to take another look and do the right thing here. I'm not sure what that is, but I'd love to see this on the agenda sometime in the future. I'd like to see our staffs perhaps get together and toss some ideas around that could correct the situation, because left unaddressed, just when I'm talking about, I'm trying to be nice here, the lack of data and the misinformation that we apparently made the decision on is going to be a serious blot, I think, on the state's economic and business reputation. And we should do the right thing. Once again, I think there was a lot of misinformation that we all were being presented with. But now it's out in the open, and I'd like to, if I could, put the two opinions in the record, so at least for history's sake, what was presented to us is understood by people as highly irregular, I guess.
Thank you. Look, we had a pretty lengthy hearing on this topic. Nobody was very pleased with the way this procurement took place, but this is a final decision by the DPW. I couldn't be more disappointed in the Board of Public Works, who fooled around with this decision for 4 months. I mean, the Board of Contract Appeals took 4 months to render a decision. We were pushing them to finally act on this thing, which they said wasn't a priority for them, and then finally made a decision after the final decision of the BPW, which was absurd. The Attorney General has a completely different opinion of this than the Board of Contract Appeals does. I believe this is going to be litigated and decided by the Attorney General and the courts, but it's certainly not something that should come back before the BPW again, and the Board of Contract Appeals has no authority over the BPW whatsoever. So I think that's the opinion of our counsel at the BPW. It's the opinion of the Attorney General. And, I'm disappointed with the entire process and everybody involved in the process, including the Board of Contract Appeals. So I for one, would not consider bringing it back before the board. I don't know.
Mr. Secretary.
I think we ought to have our counsel to the DPW and
counsel,
the AG address this.
The Attorney General,
but I'm not sure
it's handling the issue for us. It's still a matter, it's in the court, between the Court of Appeals and the Attorney General.
I don't really want to interfere with an ongoing litigation.
It's in the midst, exactly.
Yeah, it's in the midst. I have one of the Assistant Attorney Generals here that can address any questions that you have.
I hear what the governor says, but I would continue my request to have this looked at by the Board of Public Works, at least our staff, in attempt to communicate with the treasurer and the governor, because I just don't think it's right, and I think this, I just think it needs to be addressed and read the record, because it's frightening how that decision was based on falsehoods, and that should not happen before the Board of Public Works on any issue, but it did here, and it's all right here, and so I heard clearly from the governor, and I have total respect for him.
Well, hopefully the Attorney General and the courts will resolve whatever disputes there are, and we'll get to the facts, but this body shouldn't be going back and looking at it because of this, this board that made a rendered a decision 4 months late.
Look forward to the to following the legal process as it develops and see what the conclusion is. Obviously, there's a difference of opinion.
Yep. Great. Any other questions on DGS? Sir, fair motion.
I take that as a maybe my comments by my colleagues, and we're going to continue to discuss this because I just find it to be absolutely unacceptable. And I'm not just talking about this particular situation. I'm talking about what was presented to us allegedly as facts. And to the extent they weren't, I will continue to raise my voice on it. But obviously, we have a very collaborative approach to things. But Ms. Clay's, if it were easy, I'd do it myself. So you're going to have to figure out how we move something on this, because I consider the state's lawyers are somewhat involved with the whole thing also in a bad way. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be happy to discuss it with you. And so we're going to have to take a break, I guess, until 11:30, because we have no more business, but we do have our bond sale that happens at exactly 11:30, so I guess we should take a motion on the DGS agenda. Is there a motion?
Move to temporarily...
Motion on the DGS agenda?
Approval of the DGS.
Second, 3-0, and then we'll take a break. We don't need a motion, I don't think. Just take a break until 11:30. Well, a few minutes before 11:30, we'll come back right at 11:30 to do the last bond sale. Great. Thank you. To get back in session, I'm going to turn the floor over to the treasurer, who's going to give us the report on the latest bond sale.
Yes. Hey, everybody. I'm back. We took two more bids while I was gone. The first was for the first series C bond. This was a current refunding. We got a great rate. This is going to refund old bonds with new bonds at a lower rate, and it's going to save the state about $23 million over the next few years. So that was very successful. We just took and confirmed the first series B bonds. So these were the taxable series that were issued. I just want to point out here, these are taxable bonds, which typically trade higher than tax-exempt bonds. But we got under a 1% yield on both of these, which is sort of unheard of. So just like treasuries and tax-exempt MMD is under 1% on these shorter maturities right now, so is the taxable. So we got a really great rate on these as well. So I have all four bids here, and I'll just run through them one more time real quick, and then you guys can take it away. So there's the group one, the group two. There's the first series C refunding, and finally the first series B taxable. Thank you very much, Treasurer.
That's very good. And every single person who buys them is getting a wonderful, wonderful investment. I move that the board adopt the resolutions before us today concerning the state and local facilities loan of 2020 for series in particular, that the board ratify and approve the preliminary official statement dated February 26, 2020, the summary notice of sale for the 2020 first series bonds published in the bond buyer on February 21st, 2020, and the resolutions adopted by the board, this board, on February 19, 2020, with respect to these bonds. I would ask for a second and a vote on these motions.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I move that Morgan Stanley and Company, LLC, be declared the successful bidder for Group 1 of the first Series A tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $245 million. $55,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $71,993,503.73. I always love these things. And a true interest cost of 0.887062%. And I further move that the first group of the first Series A bonds be issued in the amounts and maturities and at the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. Ask for a second and a vote on the bidding group one first Series A motions.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I move that Morgan Stanley and Company, LLC, be declared the successful bidder for Group 2 of the first Series A tax-exempt bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $249,945,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, and with a net premium of $77,561,770.46. And a true interest cost of 1.846938%. And I further move that the second group of the first Series A bonds be issued in the amounts and maturities and at the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. I would ask for a second.
Second.
And a vote on.
Aye.
All those in favor? Aye. I move that Wells Fargo Bank National Association be declared the successful bidder for the first Series B taxable bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $50 million, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a true interest cost of 0.912612%. And I further move that the first Series B bonds be issued in the amounts and maturities and at the interest rates and prices set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. I would ask for a second.
Second.
And a vote on the first Series B motions.
Move approval.
And I move that Bank of America Merrill Lynch be declared the successful bidder for the first Series C tax-exempt refunding bonds in the aggregate principal amount of $234,270,000, subject to resizing as provided in the official notice of sale, with a net premium of $27,602,412.04. And with a true interest cost of 0.717760%. And I further move that the first Series C bonds be issued in the resized amounts and in the maturities and in the interest rates set forth in the successful bid for the bonds. Ask for a second and a vote on the first Series C.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And finally, I move that the board authorize and approve the issuance of the final official statement for the bonds.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. This really is, well, congratulations to everyone, and particularly those happy taxpayers who bought those bonds. This is really an extraordinary sale, which really does show the faith that people have in Maryland as a very sound conservative investment.
It does. It's a terrific bond sale, and I again just want to thank all of the staff, all of your team, for doing a great job on today. So let's give them all a big round of applause.
That refunding bonds, the $28 million, which we won the refunding bonds because the interest rates now are so much lower, but that is pure profit to people in the state of Maryland.
Sounds good. We should do this every day.
Yeah.
Can I get a three thumbs up for the bond sale?
Yeah, there you go. Let's do a thumbs up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you get it 2 weeks?
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. Are you responsible for technology?
But I've been here when
you have a lot of
embarrassing. That's right.